keys to transformation.
Today, we're going to talk all about the fun of karma. So I know what you're thinking. You're like, the fun of karma? That doesn't sound at all very fun. Well, that was my impression, you know, as I many years ago started off on this journey. Like, you know, karma was one big look out, you know, you got it coming because you done did something and now it's coming back to you. Maybe it was this lifetime, maybe it was a different lifetime. But there's something else, which I had no idea, and what I like to call the fun of karma. And the fun of karma is that karma works in both directions. It has no choice. And what I mean by that is that the nature of karma is that the oneness of the universe that everybody talks about, you know, from the ancients, that we're all one, the universe is one, it's one energy with these different expressions. And there's a balancing effect that happens. And this is for things that we might consider positive as well. So if you are out there doing something, being generous or some other thing that is really positively impacting others, you can be assured that this will come back. Now, when I say positive, there's something very interesting about this. You cannot trick the universe. It's like your intention is known. What were you intending within whatever action or something you said? What was your intention? There's one of the stories that I got to experience along the journey was kind of very unexpected, and it all started with a priest and a nun. Now, this priest was walking on a sidewalk in the city with a nun, and he asked the nun, "Hey, do you got any change in your purse?" And "Yeah, how much you need? Give me all of it." "Okay." You know, so the nuns gives the priest all of this change. He's got a big handful of change, and he takes the change and throws it down on the ground. It's sprayed out. And the nun is like, "What are you doing? It's my change. I need that. That's money. I need the money. Why are you throwing money on the ground?" And he goes, "Look up. This is a grammar school right here. Can you imagine when they come out and they're finding all of this change? They're going to go nuts. It's going to be all of this joy that they're going to feel. Like, they're going to be so excited. They're going to be so joyful. They're going to feel so good." And you know, I heard this story from the nun, and I was like, wow, this priest was kind of brilliant in that he was creating joy that he would never see. He's not going to wait around, and they didn't wait around for the kids to come out or anything. But he knew that I'm just creating joy for some pocket change. And when you're a child, right, you really feel the joy and the excitement. I remember for me, there was a time when I found a Mexican peso. And the Mexican pesos back in the 1960s were about this big, and they had a big eagle on it. And I think it was an eagle clawing a snake, but they were thick, and I thought I had found gold, as a little boy. I was like so excited, it was really heavy and it was so cool. I thought I was rich, but and even to this day, if I'm in a parking lot and I find a quarter, it's like it's a quarter, We can't buy much with a quarter these days, but sure does feel lucky, that when you're like, oh my God, I found a quarter today. It's like, yeah, and if it's a if you found a dollar or $5 or something like that, that's even more exciting. Well, I took a, as they say, I tore a page out of this priest's book. And I was like, that's pretty smart, because you're out there just creating random joy, and there's an echo effect that goes out. The days when I did find a quarter, or a dollar or whatever, you put your little pep in your step. You're a little bit happier. You feel a little lucky. You feel good. It seems silly, but it's a very positive vibe. So, what I did is, at the time, I happened to have a vessel, and the vessel was in a marina where I had to drive home. I'd work aboard. That was my office, and then I'd drive home. And by the time I drove home, it's, 5, 6 at night, and all the people have long since left the school. There was a little Catholic school, very small, but I would drive home on the way home, and in the side pocket of my car, you always take the change out and dump it into the side pocket of the car. That's what I do. So this big old pocket, I use it for, parking meters and that sort of thing. So what I would do is take a big handful of that change, and I'd roll down my window, and nobody's at the preschool. I knew they were coming in the morning, when it's dark out, and I just wing it right at the entrance, so when the kids would come in, they would be like, God, look at all this money. We're rich, So, I would do that all the time. And I also was doing some other things. If I happened to be walking around, I'd pull a dollar, out of my wallet, or even a 20. And if I was near a bus stop, what I would do is I would take it, roll it up, and cram it in a crack where there's just a little peek, just a little peeking out, so that when someone is there at the bus stop, that they're looking down. And if you're at a bus stop, I've been at bus stops. It can be kind of hard. Life doesn't feel so generous. And pulling out a 20 out of a crack, it's like, what the heck? I've had my prayers answered. And in a way, they did. They did get a prayer answered, and so I would do that type of thing, just for fun. And The weird thing that happened is that this was going on for months and months. I would do it all the time. And I used to own a few different aircraft, and I would spend a lot of time over the ocean. I'd go in between Southern California and Catalina Island, and as I was flying, I would always be scanning the water. We had the Mexican cartel. Always you'd hear stories of them throwing over, whatever, because they're running from being busted. So, I'd be scanning. It's like, is there, like the fantasy was like, I wonder if there's a bale of money just floating out there from the cartel. It seemed, I'd never seen it. I had basically about 1,000 hours. 1,000 hours mostly over the ocean, never saw a thing. And then also I probably had, equal to that in boats. Never saw a thing ever. Months after doing this, kind of on the regular, I found myself heading north, offshore. And as I tell this story here, I believe the statute of limitations, this is a legal term that I, the amount of time when you've done a criminal act to when you can be prosecuted, that's called the statute of limitations. I believe the statute of limitations is well expired. This is many, many years ago. But I was offshore, and I noticed there was some birds in the water. And as you're aboard a boat, if you like fishing and stuff, you're always looking for the birds. There's something going on. But this time it was very, very different. It was like, there's something in the water, and there's birds there kind of sitting on it. And I was like, that don't look right. There's something there. So I was all alone, and I turn the boat and I go over there and go over, and I'm like, God, what is that? There's something there. And I get up close, and I end up getting the gaff, to hook this thing. And I'm a little concerned about falling over, trying to get this thing on board. It's huge. It's about this big, this wide, and it's about this deep, this wide. It's pretty big. Anyway, I get it, and I gaff the thing, and I'm like, my heart's starting to beat. I was like, oh my gosh, is it something? Is it, did find a bale of money or something? I was like, oh, this is gonna be great. Anyway, my heart's pounding, and I'm like, and I now there's a hole in it, and I reach in the hole, and there's something in there, and I grab it out, and I pinch it, and I was like, oh God, it's like oregano, and by the way, I don't smoke pot. And I'm looking at it, and the writing, there's writing on it, and the writing looked Chinese to me. And I'm like, oh God, a bale of oregano fell out of a Chinese ship or something like that. And I'm like, eh. And then, I'm putting the gaff away, and I go around the other side, and I look at it, and I'm looking at it from a different angle, right? Upside down or whatever. And I'm like, no, that's 40 kilos. It's like 40 kilo. It's 40 kilos, not, some Chinese writing. I'm like, oh my God. It's pot. It's like huge, huge amount of pot. So anyway, what ends up happening is I'm like, oh my God, this is pot. It's so much. I have no idea how much this is worth. My heart's pounding. I am so excited. I'm like, oh my God, Rich, this is, what do I do with it? Oh my God, it's so much. But there was all of this excitement over this huge bale of pot, and I was like, oh my God, what am I going to do with it? Right. It was so extreme. And after that, I was kind of questioning, myself, why did this happen? Anyway, as it turns out, I got to experience the excitement, the thrill and excitement that I had put out there to the world. And I had been putting it out there on the regular. So, but of course, the universe has no choice but to give me unexpected joy, sudden excitement, treasure, all of that came back to me, it was really fun. And I know what you're thinking, because I get this question from the very few people that I told this story to. It's like, hey, whatever happened to that? Well, I've never been around that type of thing before. It's just not my world. But I had it down in the bilge, and because it had been in the salt water, it was dripping this green, and the entire bilge and underneath smelled like unbelievable, so much of that. And at the time, if you were caught with something like that, I think the rules were you could lose your vessel. They could confiscate your vessel. So it was really kind of a stupid move. But really it turned into, because I was like, oh man, I got to get rid of this. We could lose, we could, if the Coast Guard comes aboard or whatever, we could lose it. So it was like cleaning up a dead body. We were like, me and a friend were like bagging it up and bagging it and duct taping it and using all these cleaning agents to try to get it out of the bilge, because if you go across the border and they have the dogs, they'll be smelling this stuff, for months into the future, and you're definitely not going to have a good situation. So there was an awful lot of cleaning that ended up happening, and we ended up dumping it in the trash. It was such an experience of joy, of finding treasure. That's what it was. And that you can imagine what it would have been like for all these other people, kids and adults, finding these little treasures that you leave out there. Which kind of begs the whole thing, if you want, whatever you want in your life is to simply begin to provide it, whatever that is, and with no strings attached. When I threw those that change at the school, I did it just for the sheer joy of knowing that I'm going to create some real excitement and some real joy and make somebody happy somewhere that I don't even know. That was my full intention of doing that. So, I don't think that it would have happened if I was like, I'm going to find a treasure and here's how I'm going to do it. I just had no thought of that happening. I did think at some point, along the journey, I was like, I'm really lighting it up. So I know there's going to be some ramification somewhere. Something's going to happen because you can't really create so much action and not have something go on. But anyway, it was a blast.
The station that makes you feel good.
What if your healing journey could feel empowering, hopeful, even transformative? Welcome to the Alkaline Collective Mastermind, a community for anyone facing cancer, staying cancer-free, or committed to prevention. No matter your stage, whether you've chosen conventional care, an integrative path, or a fully holistic approach, here, you're not alone. Here, your healing journey becomes a journey of empowerment. We explore the science of oxygenation, metabolism, and alkalinity, while strengthening your emotional, spiritual, and physical well-being. This is a mastermind with heart, accountability, connection, wisdom, and real support. Because your journey isn't just about surviving, it's about thriving. Join us by clicking on the Alkaline Collective Mastermind banner on the UK Health Radio homepage or directly at alkaline-collective.com, where self-belief grows, healing deepens, and transformation begins.
Somewhere on Earth, there are 4 acres that belong to you. You don't need to be there in person, only there in purpose, protecting it, defending it, keeping it alive. Because the world doesn't need more good intentions. It needs more meaningful actions. Register your interest at 4acresearth.com.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
All right, and we're back. And today we're talking about karma. And that it doesn't necessarily have to really be like a bad thing. It can be something absolutely terrific. And it all comes down to our intention. What are we doing? What are we doing? And what are we causing others to experience? This is something that is within our control. That's really kind of an interesting thing because most of the time we feel as if karma is completely out of our control. Like, you know, I can't help it, you know, but very much it is. So the next thing that I wanted to gift every, which it was a, this was a gift to me, and I want to pass it on to everybody, is something that I wish I knew at an early age. And that is how to tell when we have karma. How to tell? And the answer, and specifically, by the way, I'm talking about the unwanted type of karma, not the one that I just told you about, where the thrill of finding a treasure, but the unwanted karma. And the unwanted karma is extremely easy to detect once you understand something super basic. And that is that your body will tell you when you have karma. How does that happen? The way it happens is you will get an uncontrollable feeling in your body and it doesn't go away. Like, let's say, for example, you know, I got in an accident. You know, I was rear-ended few weeks ago, and got jostled about, banged it up pretty good, and I got jostled about in when I got hit, but got squared away. The poor woman who hit me, her mother had died a week prior. And, I'd gone up to her, and she was in clearly in shock. She's shaking, and she was like, "My mom died a week ago, and everything, and now this." And I was like, "Oh, just, it's okay. I'm okay. And you're physically okay? Yeah, I'm a little banged up, but I'm fine. It's okay. We're all right. You're okay. I'm okay. We got insurance. It's gonna be all right." And I did not, what I did not experience at first, I was like, and my body was, shaken up. But within, 10 minutes, the shakiness had kind of left, and I was able to, just have a normal conversation with her about, like I said, we're both all right. But the thing, the gift that was given to me of understanding about karma was that when we have karma, it lasts more than the 15 minutes. Matter of fact, you replay the situation over and over, and you have a real feeling in your body. Your body has a uncontrollable feeling that goes on for hours, maybe. Keeps you up at night, if you can't sleep very well, because of, they said this or they did that or whatever be the case. So that feeling of when someone has done or said something to us, and the feeling doesn't go away in, in 15 minutes or less, then you start to simply examine what is going on. Do I have karma? And the very first thing about karma is that it is something we want to deny. And what I mean by that is I have long ago come up with three words for myself. Have I ever? Have I ever done something like this? And the immediate answer is always, hell no. No, never done anything like that. And the reason that I deny it is because I have a blind spot. I don't really see it in myself. But because of this this teaching that I got, like, hey, your body is doing this, it will always tell you the truth. So sit with this. And I ask myself the question, have I ever? And I utilize one of the cognomovement techniques. And the cognomovement technique is to roll my eyes. The importance of rolling your eyes very slowly is it forces us to activate different parts of our brain. The position you look in gives you access to different parts of your brain. Have I ever? and I simply just roll my eyes all the way around. And I know I've done it, but where and to who? Now, the trick here is to go to the essence of it. The essence of this is what really upsets me about this person doing this. Well, they're a thief. They're not. It's not the thing, the thiefing that upsets me. It's the lying. No, it's not the lying that upsets me. It is the betrayal. It is fill in the word, the essence of it. And when we find the essence, so the essence is the thing that lights you up. This is the thing that really is disturbing to me about their behavior. And as we go through and look at that essence, have I ever done this essence to someone in my life? Is there ever a time that anyone in my life had interpreted me this way? This question, if you're honest and you keep moving your eyes slowly, what will end up happening is that you will you'll find the exact match. And in the next part of this episode, we'll talk about the value of that, which it is going to provide you with tremendous value and growth if you go through this process. So we're ready for our next break, and we'll be right back after a word from our sponsors.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
What if your worst dreams aren't your enemy?
Falling, cheating, being chased, naked, drowning, losing teeth. What if I fail? What if something goes wrong?
I'm Teresa Chung, dream expert, best-selling author, and co-host of The Healing Power of Your Dreams. And in my latest title, Extreme Dreaming, I reveal a powerful truth. There are no bad dreams.
They feel so real, but that's so you remember them.
They're messages, signals, transformative gifts guiding you toward clarity.
Click on the Extreme Dreaming discount banner link on UK Health Radio homepage and learn to decode even your darkest dreams.
Extreme Dreaming.
Are you ready to listen?
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Okay, and we're back. So, what we have here is the identification of the problem, the thing that we have some negative karma around. So, we listen to our body. Our body is not letting go, and I'm looping thoughts around what was done to me. And I find out the essence of it. I am upset because this person betrayed or lied or cheated or you name it. And then we look at Where has someone felt that they experienced this from me? As we roll our eyes, it helps us to see all the events of where I might have done this in my past. Now, the next gift that was given to me, which I want to pass on as well, is the statement that karma does have a purpose. And the purpose of it is to help me to change my mind about a thing. Help me to change my mind about a thing. Well, what that means is that I know what it feels like to have it done to me, which really sucks. And then I know what it feels like to do it to somebody else. Sometimes it feels necessary. It feels like a misunderstanding. It feels minor. I always like to say, what I did was a grain of sand. What they did was an entire mountain. And that's the way it often appears. It's like it's not equal. It's not equal, and it's not equal because it needs to get your attention. It's very important for our growth to actually get our attention. How do we get our attention? We need to get really, like, have it glaring at us. So, as this thing that somebody becomes exaggerated, I like to call it when I have not learned my lesson yet, if I have not seen my karma, what happens is it becomes so extreme, it's as if I have hired a cartoon character to come in and play a role in my life to show me how and be absolutely ridiculous. And I need to be in shoved myself into a position that I can't get out of. Like, maybe I'm employed, and I can't leave the job. Maybe it's a family member and you can't get rid of your family. So now you basically got to put up with them. That's why there's so many karmic lessons that are learned within a family. You can't get out. You're stuck. So it provides an opportunity for you to be pushed to the point where you start to see, ah, this is what it feels like. This is what it feels like. Okay, all right. Well, as I mentioned just a little bit earlier, it is basically to help us to change our mind. And what we mean by change our mind is stop doing it. I'll stop doing it because I don't want to experience it. It's basically like an infinity symbol. I do it, and then somebody else returns the message to me. It's a constant return. All of our actions are as if we've written a letter. We've written a letter to Joe Blow. Joe Blow, hey, Joe Blow, I'm going to fib to Joe Blow. And then months, years later, Sally Sue comes and returns the letter to me. As soon as I write that letter to Joe Blow, I put it in the post office and there's a stamp, return to sender. And Sally Sue is the postman that comes back and returns that letter to me. So I open the letter and I'm like, screw you, Sally Sue, you suck. Well, we didn't look that we're the one who actually addressed that letter. And it's just come back. So the way that we can stop it from happening, ending our karma, is to simply stop doing it. If I don't send the letter anymore, it doesn't come back. And it's so simple to do. It's also really interesting because the pain of that returned letter, if you really get it, you'll be like, you know what? I don't want that pain anymore. And I certainly don't want to cause other people. I can understand how bad this sucked for them now. So I'm ready. I'm ready to quit. I'll quit doing it. I won't do it to anybody anymore for any reason, anytime, anywhere. Now, this will take a bit of effort because you have to be aware, right? You got to be aware. So often we will like not fully apply this. We maybe we're upset with people being rude to us, and we don't understand it because we're so nice. All day at work, we're very, very nice. But then, maybe we're rude to the person that's homeless, that's asking for a donation or some money. Or maybe we're rude to a person that we think cutting the line in front of us. We're rude to people in traffic, whatever it might be. But we have to equally apply our karmic lesson to everybody. We don't get to exclude. And the reason that we don't get to exclude, and we can exclude, but we can just continue our karmic lesson. The reason that we want to make sure we're all inclusive is because we're all one energy. We're all one. So if we're all one, we need to make sure that we're not doing it to anybody, anytime, anywhere, anymore, for any reason. This will really change things. It'll change things because there's no more energy of it from us. And ultimately, what happens is we grow very, very quickly. If you do this process for the events of your life, what'll happen is it's super fueling our growth. Our growth is done in twos. We learn in relationship. And if we take the time to ask the question, we can grow very quickly. The quality of our life. Imagine people not doing the things they used to you. It's just gone. It's just, people don't do that to me anymore. It's just how it is. And with that simple change, you've elevated your awareness, your understanding. Your understanding expanded. The thing that keeps our karma in place is the denial. That has absolutely nothing to do with this. The fact that I yelled at my neighbor has absolutely nothing to do with 2 years later, somebody in the grocery store yelling at me. Nothing to do with it. Those are completely separated. If you run your life as this has nothing to do with that, you will continue the cycle. And it'll come from anywhere. Our karma is, interestingly, not typically given back to us by the person we gave it to. It would be so easy to figure out. If, for example, I went over to somebody and I kicked them in the shin. You know, I kicked them in the shin. And immediately they turn around and kick me in the shin. Like, oh my God, I kicked their left shin, they kicked my left shin. Just like that. It's like, bam, bam. I was like, ow, damn it. It's you know, instantly you're like, okay, I can put that to those two dots together. But in this lifetime, the way it works is we simply have a lot of time in between, varying degrees of time, but a lot of time in between. And then we also have a different person, their different gender, you know, they're in a different position. They're our boss, they're our employee, they are our friend, they're our neighbor, you know, but there's somebody around that is giving that letter back to us. One of the things that was given to me also as a gift, which was, you know, as Neil Donald Walsh in Conversations with God said, that you've been sent only angels. And that person delivering back that letter to you is an angel. There's somebody that you hired wearing the most disgusting of disguises. And when we realize that, and we realize that they're here for that purpose, and a sense of gratitude comes along for them versus a resentment, you'll know you got it. You'll know you got it. And you stop doing it. Those two things in concert will change in a very real way your experience. There's so much more. Check out cognomovement.com. That's cognomovement.com. We have a upcoming seminar in Mount Shasta, and it is 5 days of intensive work. Check it out under the events. Thank you, and I'll look forward to seeing you on the next episode.